The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
Coming to you from the heart of Silicon Valley,
this is CUDA Confidential,
the official podcast of the San Jose Barracuda, AHL affiliate of the San Jose Sharks. Now, here's your host, Nick Nolenberger.
Welcome back to CUDA Confidential. I'm Nick Nolenberger, play-by-play voice for the San Jose Barracuda. In this episode, we've got a great guest, the longtime voice of the Milwaukee Admirals. Aaron Sims joins the show. Sims will help us preview what will be a two-game series this weekend between the Barracuda and the top affiliate of the Nashville Predators. In fact, it marks just the third time, Friday that is, that these two teams will meet up. The only two prior matchups in the 2016-17 season. So this weekend kicks off the first two games of a four-game season series. The Barracuda will make their way to Milwaukee later in the season. Through three games, the Barracuda are 1-2. They have dropped their last two. After a wild opener, 7-6, back on October the 11th, the Barracuda had a full week off until they returned back to the ice the following Saturday. That was in Bakersfield, and they certainly improved defensively. They took some really good strides after a very wide open, helter-skelter type of opener that, while you take the win, I don't think the coaching staff is all that pleased with the structure in the defensive effort, but things certainly improved in game number two, and head coach John McCarthy even mentioned in my conversation before Wednesday's game against Coachella Valley just how pleased he was with the team's effort. And sometimes you watch a game back and you are frustrated with your team and you end up bullying into them because of their effort. That was not the case at all. He really liked his team's effort. He even noted how much he liked their forecheck and just their relentless pressure. Unfortunately, they produced just one goal in that second game against Bakersfield after lighting it up for seven the week prior. So the offense dried up a little bit. The defensive structure got a little better. So going into Wednesday's game against Coachella Valley, you're looking for a little bit more balance, staying within your system, being defensively sound, but also generating a little bit more, not totally sacrificing the offense just to make sure to limit the opposition's chances. And it did feel like at times the Barracuda reverted a little bit back to what they did in the opener. They were a little bit too wide open. The puck management was really a point of contention in the loss on Wednesday against Coachella Valley. Just too many giveaways. The Barracuda three different times went on power plays only to squander the opportunity by taking a penalty themselves. And there was just too many mistakes, it felt like, to overcome. And ultimately, in a game in which the Barracuda at one point reeled off 3 second period goals and had a 3-1 lead in the second period, and in a great spot, they allowed three straight in that second period. After scoring three straight, they go down 4-3 going into the third. Coachella Valley tacks on another goal, and then they seal it with an empty netter and roll to a 6-3 win. For the Firebirds, the first win of the year. They are now 1-2-1 on the young season. Last year, the Barracuda went 7-1 against Seattle's top affiliate. That was after earning just one win in the first two seasons of head-to-head play against Coachella Valley. They went 4-0 at home last year as well against the Firebirds, but they drop the season opener against Coachella Valley, the first game of the eight-game season series, by a score of 6-3. Barracuda will continue this three-game homestand, as we noted, this weekend against the Milwaukee Admirals, a team that has reached at least the second round of the playoffs in three consecutive years. This has been a really solid group, even with interchanging personnel over the last handful of years. They have been highly competitive coming out of that Central Division. So without a doubt, the Barracuda will have their hands full going into a series against a team they really do not have much familiarity with. One guy for the Barracuda who will be going against his former team in the Milwaukee Admirals will be Jimmy Huntington. Huntington did not play on Wednesday. We were not given word on whether it was injury-related or just a numbers scratch. Right now, the Barracuda have a ton of forwards. They reassigned Donovan Hoole and Lucas Van Robois to the ECHL just to lighten things up a little bit. Those two spent the entire season last year as rookies in the AHL, but they go down to the ECHL because the Barracuda have 18 forwards on the roster, now down to 16. So not sure if Huntington was not in the lineup on Wednesday because of all the extra bodies or it was injury related. If he does play this weekend, it will be against his former team. He played for Milwaukee 3 seasons ago and helped the Admirals get to the conference finals. So there's a connection. Right now, Ozzie Weisblatt is not on the Milwaukee roster. He is currently up in the NHL. So unless he is assigned down to the Admirals this weekend, we will not see the former Sharks number one draft choice, who was traded to Nashville a couple of summers ago for Igor Afanasyev, made his Barracuda debut in game number 2, but did not play on Wednesday against Coachella Valley. Again, not given word on whether it was injury related or just because of the numbers game, but Afanasyev did drop the gloves in his Barracuda debut against a very tough customer and a large human being in Josh Brown. So you wonder if maybe he had some impacts from that fight. Not speculating, but it does make you wonder. So it'll be interesting. It's a little bit of musical chairs right now as the Barracuda continue to navigate how much personnel they have on the roster. Again, the forward group down to 16, so you've still got 4 scratches at the forward position in theory that will have to sit out. And then defensively, they've got 8D, so 2 extra D. So that's still 6 guys who will sit out in these games, at least with the current structure of the roster. Some guys who have not yet played this year, we mentioned Hull and Van Roboys, they have not played and have since been reassigned back to the ECHL, but we have still yet to see Shane Bowers, who was acquired from the New Jersey Devils in that Thomas Bortolo trade this summer. So we have not seen Bowers, a former first-round draft pick this season. And we mentioned Afanasyev did not play on Wednesday. Jimmy Huntington did not play on Wednesday either for the Barracuda. Sam LaBerge did not play on Wednesday. He hasn't played the last 2 games. LaBerge played in the opener in that 7-6 win. Probably missing a guy or two. And then on the back end, John Gormley sat out as one of the extra defenders, and Matthias Haviland did not play on Wednesday either. He was replaced by Jake Furlong. We will see, I would imagine, shuffling the roster as this season continues to get going here. A slow start from a schedule standpoint, but things will start to ratchet up. The Barracuda have 2 games this weekend. Then they play Wednesday in San Diego on the road, and then they come back home for a pair of games at TechCU Arena on Halloween and on November the 1st. So things will start to condense in terms of the amount of games per week for the Barracuda. As we mentioned, the longtime voice of the Milwaukee Admirals, Aaron Sims, is going to join us here on the program. So without further ado, let's throw it to that interview with the voice of the Admirals, Aaron Sims. We're very pleased to welcome the longtime voice of the Milwaukee Admirals to the CUDA Confidential podcast. Aaron Sims, it's been about a decade since the last time I saw you. That was my first year back in 2016-17. The two teams, the Admirals, the Barracuda, have not played since. Just 2 games all time head-to-head for this season, and this weekend will kick off the first of 2 games as part of a 4-game season series. But Aaron, first and foremost, thank you for the time. So great to catch up. How is life? I know things have changed for you since the last time we saw you all those years ago.
But I tell you what, though, you bumped into me. We were in Ontario and you were loading in. You guys were loading in. So we were playing in Ontario at the beginning of 2018 and you guys were coming in like the night after or something like that. So it was like one of the few times that Ontario, that the rain was in its building. That they probably practiced in their own building. That doesn't happen ever for them. One of the few times that happened, but that we bumped into one another. You were loading in your team and pushing stuff, and you had to push me over to tell me who you were, because we saw each other in 16-17 season, and that's been it. And it's been family, things happen, but fortunately I'm still here, and fortunately, there's still hockey everywhere, so it's been good.
Good memory, because don't even recall that. 2 ships passing through the night as 2 teams are swapping locker rooms. But things have changed. When we first met, you had 1 daughter. Now you've got 2, and now you're playing man-to-man coverage with your wife. But she's got an extra one when you're on the road, which I know that lifestyle. We're gone quite a bit. But wonderful to catch up. I'm so happy that you're doing well. Let's talk about your team. This has been a franchise that has really set a bar of success. Looking at the most recent last 3 years, 3rd round of the playoffs every year, it's been a pretty automatic trip to the postseason, it feels like, over the last 10 or so years. Tell me about this version of the Milwaukee Admirals, the 2025-26 version. What are the expectations? Where do they feel like this team can go? And as we see every year in the AHL, there's so much turnover. It's hard to have that stability with a lineup. But how are you guys feeling in the early going here?
And that's one of the things, like what you said about turnover. There has been a lot of turnover the last few years with the parent club Nashville not doing so well, specifically last year. But even before that, we've had situations where 3, 4, 5 guys have been dealt near a deadline, whether it was the parent club or us. And then Scott Nickel, the GM, we're lucky. He wants to win. Certainly we're here to develop, but it's A1B type of thing. Let's develop in a winning environment. Let's develop winners as well as the other skills. And I think, you know what, there's 32 NHL teams that all want to do the exact same thing, right? This isn't the old days of, hey, let's graduate one guy this year and then graduate one guy next year and we'll have, no, everybody, you want to have a winning environment. That's why the veterans matter. That's why those types of guys to teach the right way matters. It's a team right now that is skilled. There's some ruggedness up there. It lacks its center, to be honest. The wings are really good, lacks its center. The depth isn't there. We probably got 3 legitimate centers maybe right now, and that might be pushing it. So that's the big trouble spot. But the last game we played, we had 6 first-round draft picks from the last 3-4 drafts in the lineup for the Admirals. There's a lot of potential. But the tough thing about this league, and you guys know it too, is we're 3 weeks into the season and we've still played 2 games. And that's it, right? Like it's you don't really know. And you can look at paper every year. I know you do the same thing. You look and see who, and on July 1st, oh, they signed that guy. He's going to add a lot to that team. Oh, Rockford signed that guy, or Coachella signed that guy, and boy, they're good veterans. And then come the season, and you have maybe they disappeared or whatever, right? You just never know. So the last few years, I've gone into the year saying, boy, it's going to be a dogfight. There's 7 teams in this Central Division, and they could all win the championship. They could all, and then things shake out, right? It just falls apart. That's an awfully long way to get to the point that I like what we have right now, but things are going to change somewhere along the way. So we'll see how it goes.
It's funny that I asked you that question because it is really such a dumb question in our league. I get people asking me all the time, where do you see this team this year? What is the division going to be like? Who's going to be the best team? I have no idea. Last year, the Abbotsford Canucks won the Calder Cup, and they have been a very solid team the last few years. I could not have predicted that they would have done that. You just never know.
No, you get hot at the right time, and people all want to point to, oh, they got this rookie, they got that rookie. And my first year in this league, it was 2005, and we had Claude Noel as a coach. And Claude Noel is one of these sages. He's just brilliant and a little offbeat. He's the kind of guy you want to know and you enjoy talking to. And I said something to him about a guy coming in from juniors, like an 18-year-old. It might have been Ryan Parent was a first-round pick at Nashville. Now he's the head coach in Utica, right? But I said, hey, Ryan Parent's here. And he goes, Aaron, let me tell you something. If you ever count on rookies, you're going to have a losing team. You can't count on an 18-year-old. You can't count on a first-year 20-year-old, whatever it might, 22 if they're out of college, whatever. You need to it's a team game. You're not going to put those guys in the lineup. The Sidney Crosbys, Connor McDavids, those guys don't come around a lot. And so to put all of that weight on an 18-year-old, they might have good stretches and they might have good seasons, but they're not going to be the guy that leads you to a championship necessarily at this level. Crosby didn't win a championship and lead the team as an 18-year-old. Ovechkin didn't do it as a 19-year-old. I learned a lot when he said that. When he said that, then it made sense to me that, okay, you get the right mix of veterans. It's always going to be a developmental league, as it should be. But find the right mix of veterans and hopefully things work out come April. And then it's a total dice roll. You have no idea. I mean, last season or the year before, thought Rockford was going to roll through everybody and they ended up getting whipped in the first round. The way they ended the season, I thought, boy, Rockford's going to really do something. And it didn't happen. You just never know. It's a funky game. Funky hops happen. A goalie that has a .930 save percentage all of a sudden stops 14 of 17 in a playoff game and you're out of the series. It's just crazy.
Yeah, it's incredible. There's so many external factors, injuries, whether with your team or the NHL team. And you mentioned the U2. The Sharks are going through it right now with all these young players in their lineup. Fans are so eager to see them have success, yet the reality is very rarely does a guy step in, as you noted. Macklin Celebrini, very much the exception to the rule. The rest of these young guys, it's going to take them a couple of years. You mentioned Scott Nickel, your GM with the Milwaukee Admirals, a former San Jose Shark. Do you see him earmarked for an eventual NHL GM job? Is that something that is in his aspirations?
I would think so. He was a development coach here. He's been the GM. He fights to get players with David Poile previously and now Barry Trotz, guys that can help win at this level. Yeah, I would think so. But you look at every roster, every team now, right? It isn't just one guy. There's three, four, five assistant GMs on top, along with your regular GM. And they all have something going for them, right? I don't know if necessarily if winning at the American League level means a heck of a lot when it comes to the next job. I'd like to think there is something there, but yeah, I could see Scott being a GM. He has the right temperament. Like, he's honest. He doesn't suffer fools very well, but he's extremely honest. He's polite. He has good relationships with people. He builds good relationships. It's funny, when he became the GM here, he wanted to have family, like the veterans, he wanted to have more family guys. He didn't want just 25 single guys who were out running around. He liked to have guys that had a balance to try to teach the other guys how to have a balance and what it's like to have a balance. You have Kevin Gravel, who has two kids now, and there were years we had players with no kids and maybe not even any girlfriends, at least in Milwaukee. Now you see the wives, you see the kids. It's become something big. We've done the dad's trips and the mom's trips and all of these things over the years with Scott. There aren't many teams at the American League level that do that. Yeah, he cares about his players. He wants to have that type of experience. And again, another long-winded answer. But yeah, I could see it somewhere along the way being there for him. He's still a young enough man to get all of that in.
Yaroslav Askarov, top prospect for the Predators at one point, spent a lot of time in Milwaukee with you guys. Great personality. Obviously, you guys had that outstanding bobblehead where he's bench pressing the net. Just a really outgoing guy. Were you at all surprised? And it started to become a little bit more clear that trade potentially could happen. Was it a shock, though, to you that a guy drafted where he was ends up departing the organization? And it helps when you've got an established NHL guy. There's a reason behind it. But did it surprise you at all?
Yes and no. You draft a guy like that, he's going to be your future. But then when the trade happens, and Saros is at the time 29-ish maybe, and okay, he's got a few years left. What are they going to do with Yaro? Is he going to play 20 games a year for 5 years? Are you just burnt? So it made sense, right? To a degree, because you're not going to end up, he's not going to be happy by not playing. Saros in Nashville is one of the most competitive people I've ever met. Not that Yaro isn't, but yeah, the two of them, Saros was going to be the guy once they committed the money to him, and Yaro saw the writing on the wall, and it can't be a very pleasant thing to say, hey, maybe this isn't the place for me. Maybe please give me a trade. So I give him credit for doing that, though. Like, he's a guy there too. He'll tell you what he wants. And you have to be, right? Like, you can't pussyfoot around these things. He's looking out for his future. He's looking out for his family. And Nashville did all right in the trade, I think. And San Jose, I think, got a future star. And life goes on. But yeah, I wish him the best. I was wondering if we would see him. But it sounds like they're committed with him for a little bit, so we'll see. But yeah, I've been paying a lot of attention to him and seeing a couple of the misplays that he's been having, and it brings back some memories.
I'm sure you saw him. Yeah, work his way through the park, if you will, playing pucks at times.
He is so skilled.
Yep.
Especially when you get a young guy, and you know this really well, Nick, I'm going to pass my puck through 9 sticks to get it to that guy on the break. You can't do that. It just isn't going to happen. And I think every so often he gets caught up in that. And yeah, I think I called him one time. And like, he is. You're going to see something you ain't ever seen before when he's out on the ice.
Yes, it does not lack excitement and entertainment, that is for sure. No. Another guy who has a connection to the Admirals, Jimmy Huntington. He was with your group a couple of years ago. We've had him here now in San Jose for a few weeks, but what a fun, outgoing personality. Tell us about Jimmy and just his time with your team.
He came over from Tampa in exchange for Anthony Richard a few years ago and joined us in Texas on a trip. And immediately I asked him to sit down with me and we ended up talking for 20 minutes, like right away. He's outgoing. We have a fan named Cooper, and I'm sure the story has been seen at least by some people in your office. Cooper is a young man who sits in the corner at the Admirals games, and Jimmy developed such a great relationship with him over the years that I think Cooper has gone out to see him in Hershey. And there are other fans I know, Ed and Mary Swab, a couple that are coming out actually to San Jose to watch the games, but they're there to basically see Jimmy mostly. They went out and watched him win the cup in Hershey a couple of these seasons ago. Jimmy, in his time with Milwaukee, made a lot of friends on and off the ice. And you'd be hard-pressed to find anybody that has one bad thing to say about Jimmy Huntington. He's a beautiful human being.
One thing I loved when I was speaking to him, because it was actually not the first time the Sharks tried to sign him. In fact, it was the third time this summer when they ultimately signed him. But I said, what are you most looking forward to being in the Pacific Division? And he said, flying. But at the same time, I'm going to miss the bus trips because that means no cards in the back of the bus.
Yeah,
we have a couple. It's not completely out of our schedule, but we do fly a lot more than we bus. But he just wants to be around the guys. He's just one of those classic players that just wants to be around people and is so personable.
Yeah, and what's great with him, too, is that there was something recently about Andrew Agazino, right? At 34 years old, he finally made his first NHL team out of training camp. I keep waiting for that day with Jimmy. It seems like he's knocking on the door more and more. Like, he's had good success. You know what type of player he is. He's smart. He does the right thing. He sticks up for his teammates. He wins faceoffs. He has good speed. He can help the team. There's 32 teams out there, and somewhere along the way, somebody's going to find out how valuable Jimmy would be in an NHL locker room. And I can't wait for that day to happen. There are guys you pull for, right? And we're fortunate, Nick, because I don't think, and you'd probably say the same thing in your decade, there haven't been a lot of bad guys that have come through your locker room. I've been here 21 years. I can probably go on three fingers on people that I wouldn't necessarily think of talking to again. That's a heck of a percentage. That's 0.0002 of what we've ever had here. But Jimmy, I used to joke that he's in my top five. My top five is about 1,000 people, but Jimmy's in my top five. There's no doubt.
I love it. Yeah, I could not agree more. There's so many good people, but there are certain guys that kind of stick in your brain as some of your favorites. Although, as broadcasters, we try not to play favorites. We try to tote that line, but we're human beings. You build these relationships with these guys. Just a couple more for you, and thank you again for the time. Looking forward, as I mentioned, to seeing you in person over the weekend. Tell us about just the DNA of the Admirals as an organization. We talked about every year there's so much turnover roster-wise, but certain teams want to play a certain way. So you mentioned that this team has a little more maybe grit. I don't know if that's more so than past years, but they do want to play a little bit of a heavier game. But just give us an overarching DNA of the Milwaukee Admirals year in and year out.
Yeah, I think every coach you talk to would say we want to be hard to play against. I think we saw in our first game, the Admirals' first game of the season, lost at Rockford in overtime 3-2 a couple of weeks ago. And what we saw there from Rockford was they've added some beef. And they had a lot of skill last year, Rockford did. As, of course, you know, the Blackhawks situation, right? They're going young and getting a lot of high draft picks and talented players, but they didn't have a lot of meat in their lineup. They've added some. Skill-wise, that team might not be better than they were last year, but I think overall they're a better team because they did that. And I think we were the impetus for that. I think when we played them in the playoffs, you listen, they gave us everything they had. Obviously, it was a five-game series, and we had to win the final three to win that series last year. But I bring all of that up because I think we have a decent mix of guys that can put the puck in the net, especially bringing Daniel Carr back. Daniel is a former league MVP. He's 34 now, but he is still, there's nobody more competitive than him. And he gets to the right spots. He's tough on the walls. So we've got some guys that can skate. It's not really a slow team, I would say. It's probably a faster team than we've had in a while. But guys that aren't afraid to throw their body around. And we'll see about the smarts as the team smarts as a whole as we get moving. But it's hard to say that right now. But you want to play the whole thing, right? It's the cliche in hockey. You want to play fast. You want to play hard. You want to play tough. You want to defend. Carl Taylor has, we've had good special teams. We've been, unfortunately, one of the more penalized teams over the last few years. But we've had decent penalty kills. Last year, I think we were third. So Carl hasn't changed a lot. We've brought in some good kids that know how to play and play hard and play fast. And again, I don't know that we're much different than any other team when it comes to the style that we want to play. I think everybody wants to play that way.
And just final question. You mentioned Milwaukee and the relationship. Barry Trotz coming in a few years ago. Big offseason last year, bringing in some really notable guys. And it just didn't turn out the way I think the organization expected or obviously hoped for. But I want to ask how it impacts the AHL club. Since Barry has taken over, and of course a longtime coach with the Predators, and now their GM, taking over for David Poile, who had such an incredible stretch, have you noticed any sort of changes on the AHL team in terms of when they're calling guys up, who they're calling up? Have you noticed any sort of tangible impact, or is it kind of status quo?
No, I think it's the same. But I think, again, hockey-wide, the league-wide, like years ago, and this happened to be when Barry was coaching, but back when I was, let's say 2010, they would call up your best player. Always. And that could be usually in that point, it's your leading scorer, right? So we had years ago, there was a guy who played a long time in the league, and I'm sure you ran into him somewhere along the way, Chris Mueller. And Chris was a guy who was an ECHL player, had an AHL contract, Nashville signed him. He made his way to the NHL and played several games for a handful of teams. So anyway, Chris gets called up and they end up putting him on a line with Wade Belak and Nick Spaulding. And Nick was a jack of all trades. Wade Belak was fairly one-dimensional, rest his soul. So they go out, and it's the third shift. They're out there they're the third line to go out in a game. So it's about 2 minutes into the game. Belak gets into a fight, goes to the penalty box. Spaulding and Mueller go back to the bench, and Spaulding leans over to Chris and says, "We won't see the ice until the second period now." And that's exactly what happened. So again, this is the evolution of the game. They have found better ways, I think, all 32 teams. If we need a third line guy tonight, if we need a checking line guy, we're not going to call up the 5'8", 170-pound guy that has a wrist shot that, you know, but can't do much else. We need a guy that's going to forecheck and crash and whatever. So that they've gotten smarter with that. But that had gone on at the near the end of David's reign as well, and of Mr. Poile's reign. So I think, again, more and more teams they understand if they're putting a guy in a certain role, they shouldn't ask him to completely switch that role at the next level. There are guys, we have Zach LaRue, who played 62 games last season in the National Hockey League. He got sent down to start this year, numbers thing. Now, Nashville has sent Brady Martin back to the OHL today as we're talking. I don't know who they're going to call up. I'm sure they're going to make a corresponding move, but who is it going to be? That's a good question. I don't know if they bring up who they think is the best guy. I don't know if they bring up who they thought had the best training camp. I don't know if they bring up a guy who is a purely offensive player. It's going to be interesting because there's a lot of candidates. As I mentioned, there's six former first-round picks in the lineup here the other night. There are a lot of candidates that could be called up at the moment. We're only two games in. I think training camp still is in the memory for everybody. It isn't necessarily your two-game resume in the American League at this moment. So we'll see how it goes. But I think, again, I give you long-winded answers. I apologize. Your five-minute podcast has now turned into a half hour because I can't shut up. Again, I think every team goes through it too. If they're deserving and they play in a position of need, then that's the way they'll go.
Yeah, makes total sense. Aaron Sims, a longtime voice of the Milwaukee Admirals, thank you again for the time. So great to catch up. Looking forward to seeing you this weekend. And one thing that stuck in my mind from the first time we met back in 2016-17 was just how nice of a person you were. I was trying to get my feet under me at the AHL level, and you were just so kind during the two games that we crossed paths. So thank you again for the time, and look forward to seeing you.
I do too. Thank you so much, Nick. Thanks for saying that. I appreciate that. Thank you.
A big thank you to Aaron Sims for joining us and helping us preview the upcoming pair of games this weekend between the Barracuda and the top affiliate of the Nashville Predators. A reminder, Friday is Pride Night. Go to sjbarracuda.com/tickets to pick up your tickets today. Saturday is R&B Night, the first time we have celebrated that theme night. It'll be a
It'll be a poster giveaway, and there will be a live concert going on between the intermissions as well. So check it all out. Check out the full details at sjbarracuda.com and get your tickets at sjbarracuda.com/tickets. That does it for this episode of CUDA Confidential. I'm Nick Nolenberger saying thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon.